Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And I'm the other guy, Halo Cannon.
And the season finale of Hunt the Truth is here. It's finally come to a conclusion. It's finally at the end. Six episodes. And what an episode it has been. Oh my gosh, this is lots of stuff to take in with this one, guys. It's a big change to what we kind of anticipated for the end of the episode. Or at least what I was thinking that might happen at the very end.
Oh, this was nothing like what I thought was going to happen. This thing, it came out of left field like long ways. All I can say is if I could do a real good English accent, I would say my name is BB and I'm a dick.
Hello, my name is BB. I can't do his English accent. No. I'm BB. I'm a dick. No. I could get an old Cockney, if you know what I mean. But he's got the very suave English accent. You can't impersonate that.
Yeah.
CW will prove that. But no.
But it's been one hell of a journey seeing the adventures of Pharaoh. And I think it's been just one of the things that I've personally enjoyed over the last month and a half, seeing the evolution of the story and leading up to the launch of Halo 5 Guardians. So it's been just really cool to see everything come to fruition and just have a finale that is so well orchestrated, so well put together. And I'm just like in shock. And talk about a cliffhanger of an ending. We'll definitely talk about it here in a little bit, but my gosh, what a fantastic way to close it out, and what a open ending that it leaves too.
No kidding. The hole they left, they can drive a truck through.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Nothing. That's it. It's over.
No!
Yeah, that would really suck if that were the case, but
I'm sure we'll see this come to fruition at some point after this whole Hunt the Truth thing. So
yeah,
I hope so. I'm still reeling from the revelations in this particular episode. I've listened to this episode more than I've listened to any other episode because my brain just doesn't want to get wrapped around it.
I know it's,
yeah,
there are just no speechless, words, huh? Words.
Waiting for you to finish your sentence, and you're just like, words.
things.
Yeah, just everything. Just, oh my gosh, my head. But it's good. It's been really cool to see this go on through, and I'm just super, super excited.
Definitely.
So let's kind of recap a little bit what's been going on throughout Hunt the Truth, because I don't know if we're going to get a few people that are going to be new to kind of listening to this, but just in case you are, we will kind of go ahead and walk through a little bit of what's going on. We already did talk about kind of the first season in our first episode talking about season two. So if you want a little refresher on that, go listen to that episode, or you can go watch some of Toe Freak's videos. He has some good videos up on that. So we start off with Pharaoh actually picking up the podcast back just after the events of Benjiro, after he got put away by Oni. We have her actually being extracted by a team of ODSTs who have been tasked with going in and taking her out of a pretty sticky situation with what's been going on with all the stuff with Ben. So they actually pull her out of her current mission, which we actually find out is she is being Pharaoh is actually her mission objective as being an Oni agent. So we actually learn she is an Oni agent, that this is her cover, and she's been kind of tasked with making the outer colonies try to kind of build up for themselves their own well-being and welfare instead of trying to bring up arms and
yeah. Basically they want people to be peaceful in their protests.
Right.
And I'm sure that just makes it things not, you know, makes it easier for Oni to go in and do whatever they want to do. Not have to worry about somebody suicide bombing their agents.
Right. And trying to make it to where they're using a tactic that's not necessarily violence in order to actually be better for themselves. So
better for somebody.
Well, yeah. Yeah. As we kind of go through it, there's definitely a lot of kind of, oh, that's very typical Oni stuff to do. And we know from the past where it's like Oni goes, and I think we heard this in season one where Ben was explaining how Oni basically just raided or just took advantage of the outer colonies, taking resources from them and whatnot. And then when the Covenant came by, they just kind of stepped back and was like, okay, you guys fend for yourself. So Oni obviously was taking advantage, or not necessarily Oni, but the UEG basically taking advantage of all of the what all the outer colonies did and taking and leaving them out to dry whenever the Covenant showed up. So we see Pharaoh get pulled in from assignment, and she's actually taken to Midnight Facility, where she takes a little detour on upon herself to go check up on Ben, who actually doesn't know that she was an Oni agent. And it turns out that he was locked up in a white padded cell, and she spilled the beans on her identity and immediately got called by Sully to that.
He's got called to the principal's office.
Yeah.
There you go.
Basically did a no-no, and appropriately so, kind of got not threatened, but Sully basically said, don't do that again, or else something you're not going to like what's going to end up happening to you. But they sedated Ben, and that's kind of the last we hear from Ben at all, which I had a little glimmer of hope that we might have heard from Ben at some point else in season two, but it kind of makes sense with where he's at, that he's now kind of locked up forever, never to be heard from again. So after that, she's given kind of a reassignment to go check up on the anomaly on Conrad's Point. Another Oni agent, Ari, I forget his last name at the moment, actually was able to report on the anomaly that happened there. So she was given a AI, BB, and I think we kind of determined through the rest of the podcast so far that it's probably a splinter of BB, not the actual full BB. But yeah, she's assigned BB and then goes and investigates Conrad's Point, where Ari actually sent out a signal saying that he has some information on the events that took place. So they go there, they find Ari, kind of a very awkward meeting to begin with, to try to make sure, to try to maintain their cover as Oni agents. So they go to a nearby rundown factory where there's a bunch of NCA people that have been joined together under Ilsa Zane, which is kind of a rogue Spartan from the Spartan 4 program.
I like to call her the Super Spartan, just because she can take on a Spartan 4 who in their armor without armor of her own.
Right. So with Ilsa Zane, Oni did some very, very questionable modifications and genetic augmentations to her that made her.
So, you know, just another day in the just another day for them.
Just another lab rat, basically.
Yeah. It's like, dude, we experimented on kids. It doesn't get much more depraved than that.
Yeah. A little messed up. Just a bit.
Just a bit.
Yeah. So once they figure out Ilsa Zane's there, they find out that, well, I'll take a step back. Ari actually told Maya that Ilsa Zane was there. And BB reported it back to Oni, and during that time, Oni decided to go ahead and pull the trigger on sending an airstrike to the factory where the NCA militants were and where Ilsa Zane was reported to be as well, using her as basically the laser site, or the laser, the guy who missed the...
Yeah, using her as the...
Whatever.
Using her location to guide the missile.
She became the target designator.
Yes. There you go. Yes, there we go. That's the term I'm looking for. So the airstrike happens. They were still in there, but they managed to get out, and Ilsa Zane was tracing them until they reached the prisoner ship. But before then, Ilsa Zane actually called out Ari as a spy, an Oni spy, kills him on the spot, and is about to kind of do the same thing to Maya before the airstrike happens and Maya escapes. With that escape, though, they... instead of going back to Oni with the data that Ari was able to recover from someone in the militant group, which is probably how Ilsa finally just said, okay, time to take this guy out. They go to a safe house that Maya has that's completely off the grid, where we find out that Mashak is still alive and has been hidden away, sleeping on a bed of grenades.
Hey, Michelle.
Why are the grenades in my bed?
Yes. The one important question, if you have to ask anything from this podcast, is why are there grenades under your bed? I think that's kind of the...
No other questions matter.
I think that's the one Mashat quote we kind of take away from season two is, why are there grenades under my bed? This might be an inopportune time to point this out, but why are there grenades under my bed? Anyways, that moment was fantastic. It was...
Mashat has a lot of those moments.
Yeah.
He definitely has a monopoly on some of the best lines.
And I can't believe those weren't ad-libbed either.
Yeah, they're just...
Well, they've got quality writers and they've got an actor that can deliver.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'll go ahead and mention now that in a little bit, we're actually going to have some of the creative minds behind Hunt the Truth. We're going to have Noah, Ian, and Andrew on talking about their kind of creative processes. So we're going to be happy to have them on here in just a few minutes. But yeah, the narration in the first season, given that it was kind of made ad hoc, where they were making episodes as people were listening to them, and then here mm-hmm. they're basically had everything laid out before the season came out. Just the talent behind all this is insane. So I'm personally very happy with how the podcast came out. Like I'm super pumped, and it's kind of sad to see it end here because I'm have a feeling this is pretty much like the end of anything Hunt the Truth related for at least Halo 5, unless there's like something else. Like I would love to see this go on, but I just don't see it realistically going on in its current form right now.
Yeah, especially after. Well, I don't want to say anything. Actually, I do want to say something, but I can't.
Yeah, there's some spoilers.
It's like hard to talk about where this would go without really spoiling stuff in Halo 5.
Yeah, there's something that happens.
Yes, please, no spoilers, because I'm only like halfway through.
Yeah, there's,
and I've already. Couple of theories have already been blown out of the water, but hey.
Once you get to the end of the campaign, there will be...
Then you'll understand.
Yeah.
I'm trying. I had to stop to come on the podcast.
Excuses.
With that, though, Maya gives over the data chip that Ari gave her to Mashak to kind of look through it, see what's there. And it's just going through... or he's kind of going... Well, sorry. She didn't give him the chip yet, but she asked him to look up some of the information of what's going on with all the anomalies, try to dig through the slush and whatnot. So, and being tech deprived for who knows how long that Mashak has been out, he was pretty much like a kid in a candy shop. Forced to
read paper books. Yeah. The horrors.
And there's still the imaginary person that took away... that was eating his food or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Needless to say, Mashak is like a kid in a candy store.
Pretty much. And then he lost his position on the Ungoy leaderboards.
Oh, yes.
Ungoy farmer. That really needs to be a thing.
Oh, I found a piece of video. I've got to get it edited. And I think I got a good idea what Ungoy farmer would look like.
Nice.
Or at least Ungoy Roundup.
Ungoy Roundup.
Either way, I look forward to it.
So it would be interesting if they actually had that kind of as an Easter egg in Halo 5. I thought that would have been like super cool to put
in there. It might be there.
It's just not found.
I guess it could be. I don't know, depending on like when they wrote the story, though, in development time for Halo 5, if it was something that they could have put in there after the fact.
Well, something small like that, I mean... It would probably be easily, depending on how complicated they made it, probably would be something easily plugged into a game during an update.
Possibly. Yeah, it could happen. Anyways, it'd be a nice little nod to the podcast, I think. Although, I will say, going through Halo 5, and maybe you saw this, Ian, but remember when they said that there was going to be a character from Hunt the Truth in Halo 5? I haven't found that yet.
Yeah. Yeah, neither have I. But they also said it would be like a very minor thing. So it's possible. Maybe it's something like if you're on one of the colonies, perhaps, or when you're on Meridian and you know, there's those tiny moments where you can just kind of explore and whatnot. Maybe there's something in there.
Some dialogue somewhere, or
yeah.
Because I'm also wondering in what format is that person or thing going to be in there? Is like, is it actually going to be a person in there, or if is it going to be like just kind of something over a radio comm, or what? Like, there's not really much detail into what kind of format this person is going to be in the campaign.
Well, from what I've played it so far, I've noticed that if you kind of hang around and just listen.
Yeah, there's a lot of like really small moments. There's
a lot of little chatter between, you know, in the humans, and the grunts are hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
But
there's some the grunts in general in this game are just spectacular.
But I've noticed that if you kind of hang around, you'll get little tidbits and stuff. Some of it pertains to, you know, the story arc of the game. Some of it is just totally random. So I would think they would put it in there. They put it in there in a more noticeable way than that. Like, you actually run across one of the characters running around, you know, while you're wandering around on Meridian or something like that.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting.
My guess would be it would have to be one of those like hub mission type things. So if you haven't gotten much through the campaign yet, there's three different hub sections where three different hub sections that you kind of get to, and it's just you're kind of walking around finding different people to talk to. So that'd be kind of my first guess on where to look.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be on I would assume it would be on Meridian.
Yeah,
I don't think it would.
So without spoilers, some of the later sections wouldn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right. Going back to Mashaq. Maya asked him to look up some of the info on the anomalies, and he found out that the chief was dead, although a lot of people saying that he's not dead and it's just a cover up. And that's where he found a little more info pointing out to the triad, that lovely little Twitter account that's been tweeting out for the past 2 months.
Glorious triad here to provide transcendence.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they died.
No, they transcended.
Oh, whatever transcendence is.
They died.
Weren't you there? Did you not get the memo?
Well, if any,
I'm calling you from the great beyond.
Transcendence is getting like tossed in gravitational fluctuations, being tossed around like crazy. Then sure.
Yeah, you're transcended. You're transcending the laws of gravity.
Like floating up in the air and then violently getting thrown down to the ground. That sounds really pleasant to me.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we never said what kind of transcendence. You're the one who assumed it was something all glorious and spiritual and stuff.
Have you guys ever heard the term mechanically separated chicken?
Yes.
That's kind of what I envisioned.
I have not heard that term, and I'm afraid to kind of ask beyond that.
Be careful what you read on packages.
Okay, sure. So they kind of talk a little bit about the triad, what it is, religious cult believing in the three lives, and that these events are one-way tickets to transcendence. And then there's the whole kind of opening message from Dask that we kind of read in full when we did that podcast. And then they were raided by Oni. And that's when they found out that there were grenades under Mashaq's bed.
That's when Mashaq found out.
Right.
Yeah. Why are the grenades under my bed?
Why don't you always have grenades under your bed? It's just practical. Right? It's about practicality.
Man, I thought that mattress was a little lumpy.
It's like I'm like surprised you wouldn't like smell the smell
gunpowder.
Gunpowder, the metal.
Well,
I don't know. That's just me, mate.
Grenades in the 26th century should hopefully be not quite as smelly, I guess.
Yeah, true. Like we could assume that they use gunpowder, but you know, I always like to imagine that like stuff in Halo uses something a little better than gunpowder. They just haven't named it yet.
Yeah,
but that's hopefully that's headcanon.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, whenever you start talking about kinetic weapons, when you know, there's just one way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the old ways are the best ways.
Yeah.
Tried and true. So
we could go with something else, but gunpowder is just so reliable.
Yeah. So they escape the Oni agents, get up on the prisoner transport, make it out into space, and then are pulled in by Jackal pirates. So we have a
And my favorite
the best
two
kind of
yeah, my favorite episode of the whole bunch. Dot.
Yeah, this was kind of a filler
as far episode. As don't get me wrong, it's a good episode, but I tell you what, when you listen to it, you better have a strong stomach.
Oh God. And God forbid if you get to watch the animated image that Xbox always puts out.
You need to find those.
You find the animated image and then go listen to the episode, and you'll have a whole new respect for, you know, buffet style food.
Wonderful, man. Wonderful.
I think I just lost my appetite.
I could still stand to eat.
So we have a little adventure through a Kig-Yar pirate ship, and we see Maya basically trying to cut deals with the shipmistress and the rest of the pirates to not kill them, not throw them out into deep space. And eventually they escape the ship after trying to convince them that they were worth something, and then Maya expertly figuring out that they were kind of stuck in the local system because their slipspace drive was locked down. So they kind of got lucky with that one and were able to get out unscathed, which is kind of rare for Jackals to just kind of give up. Well, not necessarily give up, but that easily keep their word when they have complete advantage of the situation.
Well, I don't know. Like, is it really that rare? I don't know if it's really, really ever been demonstrated. Like, yeah, we know they're very opportunistic and they'll take advantage of everything, but of any situation they can. But I don't know if it's ever really been shown that they will necessarily break their word. I mean, you know, well, they're contracted as pirates or as soldiers by the Covenant, and as long as they're under those contracts, they seem to follow them pretty loyally.
Well, to completely hold up their end of the deal without any other little caveats to it. And I guess they did seem pretty desperate, too.
Yeah, I guess it could go either way. So I'd have to go back and read some of the older fiction, but I don't know if there's been a whole lot of examples that would necessarily state one way or another how the nature of the Jackals.
Right. So after escaping the Jackal ship, BB takes the data from Ari's chip, since he knew that Mashak wasn't going to really be able to analyze the data that quickly. And he managed to come up with a model that kind of accurately predicts where some of the next anomalies were going to happen based on weather patterns and geological and gravimetric disturbances. So they found a planet that was likely to have another event happen, which was Laika 3. So they made their way there. And once they got out of slip space, they were attacked by Ilsa Zane, who refuses to die, which basically shot them out of space onto the planet. So they managed to survive the crash and were taken into the care of Das Gavadim, the leader of the Triad, who him and his followers kind of nursed Maya, Mashak, and Boswick back to health. She had a bunch of questions, obviously, of what was going on. He didn't want her to talk at all. He was super elated that Pharaoh, of all people, were there at the time of the event about to happen. And he put her through this evaluation of... We don't know exactly what the evaluation was, but during it, Das basically asked her to explain what she knew about him and what she knew about the Triad and everything. And she obviously called him out for providing a false belief that was completely centered around him, and then started to threaten to tear the place.
Is it going to be centered around? I mean, really?
Well, you know. I guess it's got to be centered around somebody.
Exactly. I mean, it's just practicality.
So the event is about to begin, but she says that she's going to tear down the place unless they show her Mashak and Bostwick. So they usher Mashak in pretty quickly. He tells Maya that Boswick is basically not there, trying to kind of figure out a way out of the situation. And the event starts to happen. Gravitational disturbances start to kind of permeate where people are floating, rocks are floating, and the anomaly is starting to happen. Boswick is levitating
like 3 feet in the air.
Yeah.
Guy knows how to time his sermons.
Yeah, he does. And then that is the beginning of the anomaly. And that is where we come to the sixth and final episode. And at this point, we have some guests to add to the call.
Yay!
Yay!
Hello!
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 Hello, one and all.
Hello, hello!
Hey, guys!
Hey, Noah!
How are you?
Good. We can hear you through Ian's Skype as well.
Oh, God. Yeah, we're in a car together. We're driving from Seattle to Portland right now.
Oh, that's terrible. Okay,
we'll just have to, like, lean over to other opposite sides of the car.
Would it be better if we're on one phone on the speaker, or is this okay?
No, this actually works well. You're not echoing through him. You're not echoing through him now, so you're all good. So, yeah, thank you for coming on. We just finished doing a recap of episodes 1 through 5, so we're just about to ready to discuss episode 6.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm Andrew, by the way.
Hi, Andrew. Welcome to Podtacular.
Pleasure to meet you.
I have listened to all of your Hunt the Truth episodes.
Nice.
And big fan.
Well, thank you. We're a big fan of all of your guys' work, so it's been...
Yeah, you guys don't realize that we all have listened to your episodes. Like, while we've been making it along the way, we've been checking in, and there were many a late night where I'd be editing that week's show, and you guys are like, oh, God, I can't wait. We'll just bring the episode out already. I'm like, I'm trying.
I'm booking as fast as I can.
Work faster, damn it.
And I used to love, because season 1, we were writing as we went, and I used to love listening to your guys' things. I'm like, oh, okay, that's how that came out. That's what they picked up from that. And that would sort of influence your guys' reactions, and then the other reactions we saw would sort of influence how I'd work on the next thing.
Cool.
That's awesome.
I just like the theme song.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, we should actually probably have some royalties because you stole some of our ideas.
Yeah.
That's one way of looking at it.
No. It's called user research. In user research.
Yes. Well, I expect to be paid for my user research. How dare you how dare you make creative content based on my ideas about your creative content?
You know what would be cool to have, though? A Hunt the Truth emblem in Halo 5.
Ooh.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get
only
on that.
For people who are listening live to this podcast.
Oh, wait, that may be actually
part of the
podcast?
Yeah, this is definitely some sort of achievement unlocked right now, right?
Yeah, definitely. I would say so. We have... this is kind of like meta right now because we have the creators of the show for the podcast and we have a podcast talking about a podcast. I mean, it's super, super meta right now.
Where are we? Like 3 levels in deep in Inception?
Yeah, this is definitely Inception right now.
Yeah.
Deeper when we make our podcast about being interviewed.
Oh my God.
You guys don't realize that we're actually podcasting this.
This is episode 1 of season 3.
Oh my God.
The big cliffhanger at the end of this episode is going to be that our entire lives have been a podcast.
True. Yeah, I might.
Men in Black to the nth degree.
I might drop the Inception button on the podcast edit. Oh, man. But yeah, thank you guys for coming on over. We have lots to discuss for this finale of season 2. Lots of kind of mind-blowing things, and especially if everyone has played the campaign for listening to this, there's definitely a lot of tie-ins with the end of the campaign. So very interesting stuff. If you have not played the end of the campaign yet, definitely kind of come back to this after or listen to the last episode of season 2 when you finish the campaign, and you'll see a lot of different tie-ins with what's kind of going on here.
Yeah, you know, the saddest part is we haven't played the campaign yet.
Oh, really?
We've been so busy making the thing that we haven't had a chance to play through it yet. So the first thing I do when I get home tomorrow night is load up Halo 5 and finally experience it.
So do you know what actually happens in the campaign?
We actually had, like, vague ideas. Like, they gave us notionally what was going on.
Okay.
But we didn't know details for various reasons. I mean, when we're making this thing, they didn't want us to... I mean, you know, logistically, you don't want to be too small universe. So the game, the story they're telling is an epic story of its own. And we want to thematically get close to that, but we could never be so close that it was going to cross over in a huge way. So we had ideas and some notions, but we didn't know exactly what was going on now.
And honestly, I think that works a lot better just because it kind of lines up with the contrast between, you know, the games and actually just the knowledge of the characters in the show. It's like, you know, I've been talking, like, on my own episodes, like, you know, these characters are experiencing the Guardians' Awakening, but they don't know that those are the Guardians.
Totally. Yeah. That was, and that was something we did totally intentionally because, you know, if you were living in that world, you wouldn't know what they are.
Yep.
And so it was really fun for us to make something where you get to see these characters experiencing stuff that's going on in the world, but in a very different way than you're going to experience in the game.
Well, and I think to me, that was what was fun from the very beginning, because, you know, people who've been in, like, consuming this franchise and involved in everything Halo from the beginning kind of know all the deep, dark secrets, and just trying to look at things from the perspective of, yeah, but average everyday people might not know any of that stuff. And just going from that place where people don't know actually created a lot more interesting drama for us, I think.
Yeah, totally.
We definitely did that a lot in season two, too, where it's like, yeah, I mean, these things about Master Chief are being released, but that doesn't mean that every man, woman, and child in existence knows.
Oh, yeah. I saw so many people, like, still react, like, wait a minute, the Chief was kidnapped at the age of 6? He was 15 and foreign unto dawn? What? Kind of mad.
If you go back and look at the SoundCloud for episode 1, you can see on SoundCloud, it's really fun, like, at what point in the track people were listening when they commented.
Yeah.
Retcon, you can see Retcon. All of these people that are like, this is blasphemy.
These jerks are retconning everything.
Yeah. Right.
That was hilarious. That was hilarious. Like, guys, it's an Oni cover-up. Come on.
the great thing is the moment when people realized that the device of, wait a minute, perhaps characters are ignorant of the truth. People were like, oh, okay.
Yeah. They do not have that same point of view.
Yeah, that's something that I had to really tell myself, that listening to these podcasts, that I need to listen to them as I am a person in the universe, not somebody that is outside the universe and has read all this external fiction. So, and once I got that in my head, it made the episodes a lot more fun to listen to.
Well, that's kind of one of the exciting things, I think, about Hunt the Truth is, too, because we never really have that perspective of what it's like inside the universe. We've always had this kind of grandiose extra universe perspective with the books, with the games, and with some of the other stuff that we've seen. We've basically been seeing it through the eyes of Oni, in a sense, kind of on that grander scale. But now actually getting something that's within the universe, it gives you a very different perspective of what's actually going on within the Halo universe.
Well, because the most compelling thing about a thriller isn't the monster. It's all the curtains between you and the monster. It's all the shadows. And so just by taking everything that everybody knew and casting it all in shadows and then revealing them slowly, it adds, you know, we can be talking about stuff that everybody knows, but, you know, to experience it from Ben's perspective or from Pharaoh's perspective on the ground is completely different.
One of the other things we do too is kind of like put the meta layer of what do people know about these characters and events. There's this one scene, because when we kind of pitched this thing originally, you know, it was a formation of what would come. But obviously, you know, when we first went to 343 and started working with them, by the way, a huge shout out to Frank O'Connor, Jeremy and Brian. Those guys were so supportive, so cool. But like we would talk to them and say, well, you know, what did people know about the Master Chief? And they said, well, what do you think? And we said, well, you know, there's this one scene in Escalation where, you know, he walks back into his childhood house and he picks up a Master Chief action figure. And it's like, wow, like it's really weird to extrapolate an entire kind of fictional perspective out of like one panel of a comic. But that was really central to what when we described it to people and talked about, like, you know, Master Chief is an action figure. That's how people think of him. And so all those little details really informed how we looked at this.
That's really cool, though.
That's actually really, yeah. I was just going to say, that is really cool to hear. It's like, it's such a one-off scene in that issue. It really, and like, personally, I never really thought about it that much, because I am one of those people that has invested so much time in the lore that looking at it from the perspective of the average person in that universe, well, like, it doesn't surprise me that they don't know about all this. It's still hard for me to imagine personally being so ignorant of all that.
Right. And I think, I mean, another thing is it's all about perspective, right? I mean, just in looking at all the feedback as we went, so many times you'd see people particularly at the end of season one, people would say, "Oh God! Oh, obviously, why didn't you see that coming? Obvious." And it's like, well, it's obvious from the comfort of your judgment recliner in your living room, but if you were actually in the middle of that horror show, running from the government with, you know, all that, all those shadows around you, and all that, you know, fearing for your life, I think it's a little different. And we tried to create that feeling of what it's like to actually be in the shadows and be, and just struggling with that ignorance and blindness. And
yeah, it's
easy to judge. It's easy to judge as a Monday morning quarterback. And
well, yeah, I to add to that, I think, you know, by the end, we were kind of like, we wanted to be annoyed with Ben Giroux too.
Yeah.
At the end of season one, like we painted him into that corner because we were like, man, we really hate this guy, but it feeds the story and it feeds the beast. It feeds what we're making. So I think, you know, it's all part of it. And what Andrew's describing is right, where we just wanted to make it feel as real as possible, especially in that first season.
Right. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, part of what we talked about with 343 also, because originally when we started, he was just a journalist. And, you know, we tried to come in really respectful and not touch anything and say, like, look, we can do totally new characters. And they were so generous and said, Frank suggested, you know, we do have a journalist. We have this guy from Sunrise.
And I'm so glad that you guys got to use that guy.
Such a gift. And part of, by the way, that was done by that artist, Mobius, which is where
Ben
gets changed up.
Well, yeah. Ben is my middle name. It's Noah's middle name.
So we really wanted to, and it kind of clicked together because part of the other thing we wanted to do is we had to rationalize, why is this guy so enamored? Why would Oni choose this journalist? If you're, you know, if you're Sully or you're someone up in Oni High Command, why do you choose Ben? And it kind of really fell into piece. And especially like you see Ben loving the chief so much, being so loyal to almost like a supernatural level, a superhuman level. And it's because he was saved. Think about how many civilians have ever actually seen the chief in action. Ben is probably one of a few dozen that live to tell the tale. And so that really informs his character too. And from there, we started to kind of see how these things could snap into place. And just so lucky to work 343, I guess.
Well, and the other cool thing was that there are so many potential structures and sort of scaffoldings that we built behind the scenes that never really saw the light of day, explanations for things that we don't have to be committed to because it didn't actually end up getting explained in any of the episodes. But we did have to sort of engineer explanations as to why, like options for why Oni would have chosen him, or how it all worked behind the scenes. And obviously we can't actually go into any of it because we like to have the flexibility to decide for sure later on down the line and optionally. But
letter to Borin, you can kind of start to see how Oni thinks about those things.
Right. But yeah, there are elaborate, we could elaborately justify pretty much everything that happened that would leave you with a question mark. That we spent a lot of time on things that no one will possibly ever know, but it feels good. It feels good to know that you can make it make sense.
True.
You guys should see these Excel sheets that were built. It's quite a feat.
We have ran out of colors. There were literally not enough colors for all the coding he needed to do.
Wow. Oh my Lord.
Well, because I mean, impressive. The challenge of it was not only did we have to sort of tell this story that started in a small place and ended with the big twist reveal in 13. It had to go all these places where we were unwrapping lies and sort of opening nesting doll after nesting doll of lies within lies and justifying why every character would have told that lie or had the information wrong or whatever it was. And I would say the hardest part was probably around episodes 6, 7, and 8, keeping track of the complexity. And that's where I got into spreadsheets like crazy, because I was like, wait a minute, why would Petrosky say, wait a minute, what is his, okay, what? And I have to like actually chart it all out and to make it make sense. And I would, I mean, from all our conversations, I'd say that probably a quarter of that agony was spent just trying to set things up so that it looked one way going into episode 13, and also the reveal that it was all, you know, set up from the beginning.
Yeah, and you guys to make that work. The general listener doesn't realize that there was a turn, there was a moment where Ben crossed the line to a point where Oni then enacted a backup plan to mm-hmm. take him down. And for the casual listener, you wouldn't know that. And Oni just seems like these dummies the whole time. But it was really fun for us to, like, sort of know what's coming and have an idea of the setup that's taking place along the way. So we had to, and, you know, even the big twist of season two and everything, we started formulating that at that point, of at least the character backstory. So it was hard to keep quiet about it all, but we had a lot of fun.
Well, we had
really entertaining then to listen to you guys on Podtacular. I think it was like two or three episodes ago where you guys actually started trying to pull up the corners of that, where you're like,
well, why would they do that if Ben was there? And then you go, oh,
and like, it was just so satisfying. Oh, yeah.
It was one of those things where, I don't know if you guys ever remember, after the series finale of Lost, there was a video that went around where somebody just asked like 300 questions that were never answered in Lost, and just unanswered questions. And I wanted, you know, from early on in our early meetings, we were talking about, you know, we want to be able to answer every single question. We won't just introduce something for shock value that we can't then justify or back up.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think one of the big questions I had kind of near the beginning, I mentioned this very briefly, I touched on it just very lightly though, but one of the things that I asked, I think either episode one or episode two of season two, was how was Maya getting all of these audio clips of where she was? And that question just got answered in this episode.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
We were watching you ask that and talking to her, do you think he's going to figure it out? I don't think he's going to figure it out. And somebody said something about it. Like, well, maybe she's, and we thought you guys were going to say it.
Well, you know what, tell for me, the moment where I was like, because it was a choice that we made in post-production, and I was really nervous that it was going to give away the twist. There was actually a couple moments I was nervous and give away the twist. The first was in episode two, when she goes into the NCAA encampment, Ilsa's base, and we intentionally put BB just in your left ear. So if you're listening in headphones, you hear BB in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And that was intentional because BB was in her head. I was nervous that was going to give away that, well, how did we get the audio of BB in her head? But thankfully, no one caught
on. And the funny thing is, people did notice the effect.
Yeah, they noticed
it. They didn't tie it together.
Right. Well, I mean,
I just thought it was my car stereo.
I always figured it was just like, it was just the way it worked. Like, he was talking to her on a private channel through an earpiece or something. That's what came to mind for me.
Yeah.
So, well, that's an example of something that we struggled with in both seasons where, I mean, you're trying to make a really complex story work, and then the wrapper all around it is the final recordings can't just be this gift that flew over across the fiction membrane into our world. It has to be able to live in their world. And mm-hmm. so a lot of times it was like, oh God, just forget it. Nobody cares. But we kept coming back and saying, no, let's do it right. And figure out, when did Ben release each of these episodes?
So yeah,
he wouldn't have released this episode until this time. And just knowing all that stuff that's not in there, but allows it to actually live in the universe. And the same thing with, Pharaoh stuff going to Osmond and everything.
Well, that was a pretty big debate with us as far as when Ben was actually releasing these episodes, until you had the episode where he sat down and recorded the first one. And then we had a timeline.
Right.
Yeah. We had a couple of, long discussions on exactly timeline on, you know, where he was releasing them, and the same effect with season two. The thought is, okay, well, where is she? You know, where is she getting this information? But when is she releasing this?
And because really, you know, the voiceover is it too,
exactly, because the voiceover, it's almost like this is all past events.
Yep.
You know, right, every episode is past events in which, you know, we find out at the end how past they were. But, you know, I think it's kind of part of the fun, trying to figure out where they fit in the, you know, in the universe as far as the time.
Well, and the moment that we break that illusion by making it impossible for that to exist in the world, then I think you lose a little bit of the fun. But I will say that I was thrilled when Ian had that idea of with the AI, because...
Spoiler alert. Jeez.
I think we're going to spoil this spoiler alert territory anyway.
Yeah, I think we're already there. But
yeah,
because it provided a nice get-out-of-jail-free card for answering those questions. Whereas with Ben, I remember specifically on episode 6, I went nuts trying to figure out, wait a minute, why would Mishak and Ray and Petra allow Ben to record any of this?
Yeah.
And eventually it was just like, you know what? They just have to address it and move on. But it didn't, it's one of those things that, that was a, I don't remember who came up with it, but it was a fun idea to have, like, wait a minute, wouldn't Petra be furious that he did that? Wouldn't she just come after him?
By the way, I absolutely love that.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite scenes too.
I think absolutely. It's my favorite. The picture, the supplemental images, I think it's my favorite.
Yeah.
Where she got the door kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course she would do that. Yeah. That was the stupidest thing he possibly could have done.
Talking about kicking.
Just to add quickly to the timeline thing you were talking about. It was really, one of the really cool things for us was all of the dates and times and when these episodes go out, they fit in the timeline that 343 has laid out for Halo 5 and everything. So even though it seems like maybe sometimes we were just putting them out, they actually are, they fit in time before Halo 5 and like, you know, where season 1 takes place sort of in the spring. You know, we knew the dates and places and times that our stuff was happening to when events in the game were happening, so that we never were like, you know, like when we're on like a 3, we know where everyone else is in the game as well. So yeah. it all does sync up, and it does have its crossovers.
Yeah.
We're just telling different stories.
That was going through my mind the first playing Halo, Halo 5 is like, oh, wait, this is when that happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I've always loved how the external fiction plays off the games and, you know, how the two different stories work together to expand the universe.
Yeah, the other thing that was really important to 343, and I think, you know, they didn't want us to do something that would be required listening. Like, yeah. I think the challenge is you want to make something really cool and really original and really fun, but if you have to listen to the podcast, or if you don't even know it exists, but you go to play Halo 5 and you don't get the full experience, that's not cool either. So we had to make sure that we told a story that was existed on its own, and it supported the game, and it linked the stories where it could. But, you know, you don't have to listen to the podcast to enjoy to enjoy Halo 5. So that was really important to all of us, to make sure that they could be their own experiences too.
And you guys absolutely nailed that. I got to say, absolutely nailed it.
And to add to that, one of the other cool things about it too is that for people that really don't or haven't gotten into the books before, this was a really interesting entry point, because there is one person that, so my normal co-host, Bywolf, he has a friend that has never read any of the books and just started listening to the podcast. So the podcast was his first in to any of the external fiction outside of the games. And I kind of see Hunt the Truth as a very different jumping in point into Halo, because with the games, you're given kind of this one directional view of Halo, basically through the eyes of Master Chief. And then with Hunt the Truth, you, if that's where your starting point for the external fiction, then you're getting a very different perspective of what's actually happened within the universe. And it, for us that have read the books that are totally in the know, we don't have the joy of actually seeing that outside and then discovering what's actually true within the universe. So it really gives a very different perspective.
I think that's why the device that that of using the serial model was so impactful. Because, you know, when I first heard that idea, I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. Because it allows us to pass the mom test, which is, would my mom understand what's happening right now?
Yeah,
we had that test.
Yes.
One of the ladies that worked with, her mom listened to, she read the scripts for all the episodes before they went out to make sure that she could get them.
Yeah. I not only did I know that it was good when my mom got it, but I knew it was really good, particularly when we were talking about the clones, when Ben figured out the clone stuff. when my mom was like, I don't want to hear this. This is really upsetting. I was like, good, good. Yeah.
That means you're doing your job, right?
Exactly.
I was a lot of people in season one.
Oh, who were you on? Who were you in? Yeah, you were Gubby.
I was Richard Sakibo. I was one of the officers. Andrew and I were a couple people that were talking about Gubby. Any of like the crowd sounds, I was usually one or two of them.
And I kissed Mark Hamill.
Yeah. Andrew is Parsons, our really creepy guy that puts the devices on Maya and kisses Mark Hamill.
My mouth smells like bile.
And I gotta be a bird monster.
Yeah, and Ian and I were the Kig Yar.
Really?
So the fun thing about the Kig Yar is there's the part where they're eating their slop. And to get the noise, so we were recording in the studio and they have little snacks, so like you get tired, or whatever, blood sugar crash, or whatever, snacks. And so Noah, you had a sore throat, you're getting sick.
And pounds back this cookie to Mrs. Fields' cookies.
He's got it in his mouth, and he's trying to make bird noises, and his throat hurts, so he's like gagging. And I thought the engineer tech was going to die. He was just like, what are you doing?
It was pretty disgusting.
Yeah. Wow. That's very interesting that you guys were at the Kig Yar. Who was the ship mistress then? Was that someone else?
That's Vanessa Marshall, amazing, talented voice actor. She's on Star Wars Rebels. I can hear you guys.
Yeah, I think Ian. What? I think we can't hear good? Ian.
You guys hear me?
Yeah,
okay?
Now we can.
Yeah, we can hear you, Noah.
Ian, they can't hear you. Anyways, Vanessa Marshall played the ship mistress. She's incredible. Yeah. She came in and just killed it in about an hour. But she's in Star Wars Rebels, and she plays Gamora in like Guardians of the Galaxy. She does a ton of stuff. She's really, really great. We were lucky across the board on the talent we brought in for this whole thing. I mean, it was beyond me. Not just the amazing, you know, main stars, but every role down the line was just incredible.
Now, I have to praise all the voice actors in both season one and season two. They did an absolutely awesome job.
Amazing.
I wish Petrosky did season two.
Yeah, the other thing for me though, and we asked Noah this last week on the podcast, but everyone did their lines individually. It was all separate. No one was in the same room, which to have that much cohesion, to have that much it feels like everyone's kind of in the same room together. To really pull that off takes a lot of talent.
It's really hard to do. Season one was actually a little bit easier because it was generally Ben doing interviews, and Andrew did an amazing job reading against Keegan when we had Keegan in the studio. So Andrew would play the other role, and then we knew Keegan's cadence at that point, so it was easy for Andrew to read Keegan's part against the actors. So that was pretty easy to get one to one. It was really the season two stuff that was really challenging when you'd have so many scenes with so many characters talking. It became incredibly challenging, and we had a compressed timeline in season two. But yeah, everyone did an amazing job. I mean, just such professionals, and they really brought it.
Well, there's two. I totally agree. There's two parts. There's the actors' performances, which I think everybody nailed. And then once you got them, though, the hard part that Noah knows really well is that just the timing in post. Because conversations in reality, I mean, even listening to our conversation right now, people don't just, you know, cut in exactly at the midpoint between two other people talking. People step on each other. There's sort of little silences. And we spent a lot of time trying to make sure that the conversations felt organic in terms of how they were timed. Yeah. When people start just trading back and forth, like, I'm going to wait till your line's over, and then I'm going to talk, and then you wait, like, it starts to feel fake, in the kind of way that if you were hearing it, you wouldn't be able to put your finger on it. But I mean, I know that Noah ended up agonizing over a lot of that timing. I mean,
season one, first.
I can only imagine.
I mean, to me though, the fact that I even had to ask that question of were these guys all in the same room together or was this done individually, I think that just kind of proves that you guys sold it.
Oh yeah,
Well, and also Andrew and I are incredible actors. And as we acted against the actors, they got to exactly. You know, they got our performance.
It was really a treat for that.
Yeah.
Keegan was crying based on my performances. Yeah. He was like, "This is amazing." And I'm like, "Stay in character, man. I know this is like mana from heaven, but Jesus, Keegan, get it together."
But so let's go ahead and jump into episode 6 and kind of go over that a little briefly. So we pick up after Maya and Mashak. We're still missing Boswick at this point, but Maya and Mashak are kind of witnessing the event happening. Right now, Dosk and his followers are humming and praising the oncoming transcendence. At this point, though, Maya's saying to Mashak, "We need to get out of here." Mashak is just standing there with his jaw dropped open, kind of dumbstruck. Boswick drives up with the Warthog. They get in. They drive off. And they're trying to figure out, well, what do we do now? How are we going to evacuate all of these people that are going to utterly be destroyed? I mean, there's not like a fire alarm that can just pull for an entire city. And BB comes in and is like, "You might be the dumbest smart person I've ever met."
He loves his doctor.
Elegantly, though.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, it starts at such high action. And this was something that we struggled with this season in particular, because there was so much action, is grounding everything back in realistic reactions. Mm-hmm. And just trying to get into the space where you're like, okay, wait, everybody's levitating. The earth is shaking. They're like, how do you like just really get in there and think, I mean, how do you, at a certain point, you're just going to be numb to it and you're just going to keep rolling. But it's hard to keep the characters grounded in that. And we tried really hard to keep that feeling real, because it's really easy for the dialogue to get to, "All right, cool. We got out of that scary situation. Let's go on to the next one."
I'd say the other part that's really hard is that BB is so smart. It's really hard to like make these situations happen where BB just doesn't answer the question. So that was always a really big challenge too. But, you know, especially, and I'll let you keep describing the episode, but especially at that point, you know, BB has an ulterior motive.
Right. So whenever they are, Maya comes on to explain that there's a Covenant air raid system that got put in by the UEG when they were getting attacked by the Covenant. So there's a possibility that they could activate that system to actually get everyone evacuated. So she asked BB if they can actually get that to work. And he says, "Yeah, if I can get to access the local AI, I can override the AI, make it seem like there's a Covenant attack going. Initiate the alarm, and then all the available ships will start evacuation procedures." So they're driving along, trying to not run into anything, as a couple of times Maya tells Boswick to look out. And then the UNSC Pelican comes on down and is starting to usher them to get out of the hog to get on the Pelican. Maya's hesitant on, like, okay, is this something that, like, they're just going to take us in? Type of thing. So she's squabbling back and forth with BB, and then Ilsa Zane shows up, the person that refuses to die.
So, in the words of Freddy Krueger in Freddy vs. Jason, "Why won't you die?" I've been waiting.
Very for fitting.
Did we ever decide, is the ODST, is that still Wily?
Yeah. So the you might not even notice, but the ODSTs, it's Wily and Gray. You never know. You only learn Wily's name, but it's the same ODSTs from episode 1 that she decks.
And you'd be so, like, if you're Wily, you're like, finally, payback. I got her. I got her dead right. She crossed the line. It's going to be a good day. And then, no, bad day.
I would have thought that would have been something that she would have pointed out in the podcast if she recognized the two people in the Pelican. But
to be honest, I mean, we had them in the booth, so we got the lines. Thanks, Ian.
It's fun training. She doesn't have helmets. Yeah.
We didn't want to bring in extra actors in, so.
Fair enough. Make little cuts wherever you can, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys didn't notice, so I think we're okay.
Yeah, it works. Well, now we know. Cat's out of the bag. Yeah.
Secret's out now.
Dang it.
I'm sure there's plenty of other little secret things that are a lot more interesting than just the two ODSTs. Did they live through getting shot down by Ilsa's Archer rockets?
They did. Yeah, okay. You can hear him in the background saying, like, you know, "We're under fire. We need backup." So they're, you know, in my head at least, the Pelican hits hits the ground, and they're sort of posted up, ready to take on the NCA.
Okay.
But if we need them to be dead, they can be.
Yeah, but if they're dead, they're
dead. Disposable characters.
We kind of left it unresolved as far as what happens to them after the Guardian comes in and it rises out of the ground.
Gotcha,
so.
Gotcha. So they take off. They leave Ilsa and the NCA to fight the UNSC. Maya asks BB if he would flat out directly disobey Oni, and he comes back and says, well, I'm not technically disobeying orders, because the way I see it, I'm still completing mission objectives by what I'm doing. So, no, I'm fully on board with this. So they drive off. They get to the shuttle port where they're supposed to be able to take over this AI. And when they get there, Maya asks BB to do it, and he says, well, I can't. The tower only talks to the satellites, and the AI is not here. So basically, he lied to Maya to get them off the planet, which wouldn't be the first time. It's not the first time that BB lied to her. And now given the fact that jumping at the end of the episode, turns out Maya's an AI. But now we know that the fact that the first line that BB says is an absolute lie to protect Maya. No. And Godzilla, this actually proves what you said back in episode 2, where they were already suspecting Maya of going rogue. So you were spot on with that assumption.
Hey, I got something right.
You know, one of the biggest challenges of this whole season was that thing where, okay, we really love BB. We want BB in this. We felt like we could. I mean, Peter Serafinowicz, by the way, amazing performance. He was in my head from the second we started talking about it as the performer for BB. But the challenge is you have this character who is highly intelligent, can communicate with Oni. How do you get them to go rogue and do it in a way where BB can still be along for the ride? And thankfully we landed where we did. And I think, you know, it plays and it works really well. But that was so hard just to get to that point where we could, you know, not just have it be spoiled because BB's there. Or foiled, I should say.
Right.
Yeah. The point where they give Maya BB, I thought that was strange, but I never could put my finger on why.
And now we know why.
Well, I mean, yeah, well, now we know why.
Part of it is like it's BB. It's like we really wanted to use BB. But you know, Maya talks about in the episode where she's in the safe house.
How she ended up in Oni.
I think we talked a lot about the time frames.
But if you think about who would have been military when the Covenant broke out, we kind of talked about it like World War II, almost kind of like an Alan Turing thing, where there are these people who are so gifted, who are in school or in other places, and they get conscripted.
And so, you know, Maya
is not a person who initially aspired to a military career.
And you guys
know Oni as well as anyone else. You know, loyalty is something that is accrued in a million ways and suspected in an equal number. So, you know, there's no way that having somebody in such a sensitive position, they're not going to be keeping tabs. And, you know, special information, special access requires special oversight.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, and for this... I'm assuming this is a BB fragment, right? It wouldn't be the full BB, because that's not something that you would completely risk.
Yeah, it's a fragment.
Yeah, okay.
They even say, I think in this episode, where like, I think at one point Mashok's like, oh, it doesn't matter if you die here, you'll just wake up somewhere else. It's like something like that at some point in the episode, I believe.
Wake up back at Oni.
Yeah, we kept peppering in those hints, because we wanted to be clear that it's not the full BB, because that would be kind of crazy.
I'd love to see them fit the full BB on a lapel. Like, I know technology is advanced by 2558, but I don't know if they could put BB in a full AI in a lapel.
They should sell those. Like, I wish I could go to a store and buy like a little Oni lapel pin.
Or NCA.
That would be cool.
Get NCA on one side, Oni on the other.
NCA,
cosplay, bro.
Yeah, there you go.
And Cortana chip in the middle. There you go.
See? There you go. Yeah, there you go. Bring it all together.
I'm assuming you guys saw the fan trailer, right?
Yeah. So that's what's so funny. I mean, she called. So Janina, by the way, is fantastic and one of the most enthusiastic people I've ever met in my life.
So
she was so excited. Yeah.
She totally nerded out over the 405th armor. She was going up and touching all the armor, all the weapons. Like,
you have no idea how excited she is to be a part of Halo and how I mean, her enthusiasm was incredible. Not only like, so just see the way you guys work. We had like 2 days to record with her in New York, and she decided to come to LA early so that she could be in the room when we recorded the other actors. And so she was actually in the room. We weren't recording her, but she showed up just to give the other actors someone to play against.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just incredible. And the same goes with that. You know, she made that trailer all on her own. She called me one day and said, "Hey, I made something. Can you hook me up with Frank so I can show it to them?" And she just did it on her own because she's that enthusiastic and excited.
She's
and
prolific, that, bro. She's yeah. prolific.
I just think it's a really cool thing. And to have an actor in your thing that's just so invested in the process and in the project, it was really cool.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to meet her yesterday. And then, I mean, just to see her totally geek out around a bunch of Halo stuff, that's just one of those things where it like being in the Halo community, it's nice to see that the actors and people that are involved with like making Halo are really that excited about the fans. I mean, another example is you guys coming on here.
Yeah, well, and also the first episode of the season,
I saw you guys talking about it.
I saw you guys were talking about it. I texted her. I'm like, "Hey, you should go on Podtacular, or you should like join the Twitch." She was like walking into a party, got on her phone, got on Twitch, and was like commenting in the comment section.
Yeah,
like she's just that. Like,
I remember that.
Into it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And how many actresses and actors already have Twitch accounts?
Yeah, that's true.
No kidding.
Very good point. Yeah,
so I'd say, you know, she's a huge fan and super cool and super down to earth and as excited as we all are about, you know, Halo and being a part of the universe.
Well, it was a great addition, and she did a fantastic job with Pharaoh/Maya, and it's been really, really an amazing experience with all the audio engineering that you put into this. All the voice acting has been fantastic. So, I mean, just huge shout outs to
Thank
everyone.
You, yeah.
But yeah, so back to the podcast. At the shipping port, the shuttle port, the fighting continues to ensue. Buildings are falling over, and the NCA and the UEG are just fighting it out, just completely ignoring the mass destruction that's going on. They're just wailing away each other. Ilsa Zane leading the NCA, and then the UEG also kind of there, just fighting on in it, completely ignoring everything. But with the whole thing of BB trying to get them to leave, Boswick just comes out and says, "This they're just going to cover this up again, like they've done every other one, all the other events that have happened." And Maya finally makes the decision that this is her time to make the truth known to everybody, and that she was going to stay. And talking with Mashok's like, "You are crazy. You are going to die." Maya's like, "Nope, this is how it needs to be." And comes up with this plan that, based off of some of the other anomalies that have happened before, all the kind of modern day technology has gotten wiped out by this. But kind of playing off of what Ari did on Conrad's point, she could possibly use analog radio to transmit out while the event's going on. So she comes up with an idea to get Mashok and Boswick to get up into the upper atmosphere, that they can be outside the effects of the Guardian, but close enough to get her transmission and relay it out to the rest of the other colonies. So she comes up with that brave idea, and Boswick decides to stay. So Mashok leaves, and Boswick and BB and Maya stay. BB against his will, since he doesn't really have the...
I am but a lapel pin.
Yes. I am but a lapel pin. Be safe, Pins. Apparently he just got... There's a fire alarm.
Oh, nice.
That's interesting.
Oh, no.
See you, Pin. See you, Pins. Hopefully you can come back.
Oh, man.
So they're climbing up this tower, and BB is trying to figure out, okay, so your plan is to incite panic, terror, and possibly make civilization rip itself apart. And he goes on to explain that Oni isn't the thoughtless behemoth that you believe it to be. There are delicate, rational, logical calculations that are being made. They're distasteful at times, but they're for the greater good. And he kind of backs that up as, how is the UNIS...
greater good.
Yes, the inevitable greater good.
I just gotta have the hot fuzz, everyone going, the greater
good. Trust the monsters.
It's for the greater good, Maya. The greater good. Stop that!
The greater good. And BB goes on to say, how can the UNICE even help people in the outer colonies if there's infighting and fear? And Maya says, well, maybe it's time the people should take the decision into their own hands and make their own decisions instead of having Oni live their lives for them. Which, I mean, you kind of see two dichotomies here. You see kind of big bad Oni, where it is kind of that horrible organization that we've come to know and love about Oni. But BB does make some valid points where if the UNSC is going to try to help anyone in the outer colonies, then just inciting fear is going to be a detriment more than it is going to be an aid to that progress. But given that it's Oni that they're working with, not exactly sure how much I would trust of that.
Yeah. It's kind of,
well, you know, I mean, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's interesting because, like, a lot of the older media, like, it tries to paint a very fair picture between the insurrection and the UNSC, but it definitely feels more pro-UNSC, whereas this gives you very much more boots on the ground. What's it like being out in these colonies? Granted, you got two different time periods there, but even still, I love the contrast. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, we did such a good job of, you know, vilifying the Oni in the first season. Like, they really seem crappy at the end of season one, that we really wanted to bring more of a gray area to how you look at them in season two. And so even, you know, from the beginning with the Mike O'Sullivan conversation all the way to the end with BB, you know, we're having these conversations where you look at this big government and ask the question. And, you know, Andrew was really great about describing this early on, where, you know, do you have to crack a few eggs, you know, for the greater good, you know, or can you try to save everybody? I mean, like, those conversations were really important to this season for us, so that Oni doesn't just seem like this big evil corporation, big bad guy. You know, they're making very calculated decisions that you have to make. They're hard choices.
Right. And I mean, to me, it came down because you have Ben getting this ridiculous point where he basically says by the end of season one, make no sacrifices. Like, the number of casualties should be zero. And that is idealistic and not possible. And that's when you could really tell he was off the rails with his philosophy. But, you know, from on the other side, you see Oni, they do have to make tough choices. I think Sully was right in a lot of ways. At the same time, did we have to create a system where we are forced to face those dilemmas constantly? Did we need to have a society that was so massive that people were vulnerable?
Yeah, we couldn't protect it all.
Right.
Or create a system where you need to excuse the excuse. You need to provide a cover for the cover.
Right. And then also, I think another big theme was, you know, yes, it may be the case that the public can't digest real horror, but if you hadn't done the first 50 bad things that you shouldn't have done crossing the line and then covered them up because they were bad, now you're so far down the path of having done things that you wouldn't want people to know that you're just covering up lies on top of lies on top of lies. And whether they're bad things or good things, you didn't want people to know. And if you've spent at least a generation keeping people deluded into thinking reality was a certain way when it wasn't, and covering things up, you can't suddenly just start letting things, you can't start airing the laundry. I mean, Sully's right, but should you have, you know, we shouldn't have let it build up that much, maybe. I don't know. There's just a lot of questions that they're wrestling with.
And it's going to be something that, if you look at within the universe, it'll take a long time to, I mean, like you said, to kind of come out of that disbelief.
Right.
One of my favorite relationships is Osman and Paragoski. You see it over Kilo 5. Kilo 5, like, we look to a lot
you see it over from Kilo 5. Kilo 5.
And it's really a story about how far you're going to bend things. And you see Osman come in as almost kind of idealistic. And by the time Paragoski has kind of stepped down, she has to make a choice about whether or not she's going to even acknowledge her own past. So that was definitely an inspiration for this kind of thing.
I was kind of hoping that at the end, when BB was talking to Paragoski, that we would hear her, like, just a line or two.
Well, no, wasn't he? Was he talking? He's talking to Osmond.
Sorry. He's gone. Osmond.
Paragoski's on a beach somewhere.
Probably. Yeah.
Wanted to hear Osmond.
Hanging out with, Admiral.
Going
Osmond. On dates with old lady.
Talking about just like the head of Oni, it would have been cool to have that a little bit.
Yeah, why didn't you have that, guys? God.
Yeah, no, it's funny. We talked about it. We wanted to. I think, you know, some there's also, you got to realize it's worse than TV and movies and stuff, but there's production challenges. There's restrictions. There's things we have limitations that we have to hit. So yeah. At the end of the day, when you're making something like this, it's trying to find the right balance of what can we actually accomplish in the time we have, and with the, you know, budget we have, and with the, you know, limitations we have, and just finding the right, you know, ingredients to make the pot.
And one of the best things about
there are many things we wanted to do that we just didn't have time or.
Well, one of the best things about the format was that we were able to do so many things because it was audio only that we wouldn't have been able to do otherwise.
Yep.
I think we had a draft where pairing for Osmond.
No, we did. We did. We definitely did. But
I like it more this way.
Yeah. We had a whole episode planned, like an epilogue with Osmond, that we just didn't have the resources or time to
figure out. I think it was a blessing ultimately.
Yeah.
I like the way it is now.
We have another blog though, that whether or not the other epilogue will ever see the light of day remains to be seen.
Well, here's
you have one.
Ooh, you never know. There may be
a secret. You post it here, and then everyone demands, and then 343 is like, "Fine, release." It's the best way to get it out there.
Are we allowed to say what it is, Noah? What do you think?
We can tell them. I think Andrew. Andrew wrote an incredible piece. So episode one, originally, the one where we go back and we see Ben, that scene with Ben was probably another 8 minutes long in the first draft. And you, Ben reads what he was writing, and Andrew wrote a fully, you know, fleshed out sort of manifesto that Ben was writing. And so we have this piece of content. We just didn't have the time to produce it, and it wouldn't have, it just, you know, you're trying to craft these episodes as best you can so that they keep moving and they don't ever, you know, hiccup. And so we still have this piece of content that we would love to do something with. I think
that'd be a nice little just Tumblr post to make.
It was fun to me because it sort of falls in a place where I didn't even know what, going back and reading it, if Ben had been brainwashed or maybe the points he was making were true, or that they were the right things to say, because he was in a really ambiguous place. I think you could hear in episode one where it's sort of like, oh, you're super crazy, or actually, do you have some kind of clarity in there? But yeah, that was a lot of fun, and Keegan was amazing to come back and do that.
That was awesome, and I think the
you said we got him for 1 hour, Noah, right?
Yeah, we had him for 1 hour in New York. And he came in and knocked that scene out. It was really incredible.
Yeah, we had him for 1 hour in New York. And he just came in and then knocked that scene out. It was really incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that scene, that really just, that tore at you, especially after listening, going through all that turmoil in season one, just hearing what happened to him, just really. And then at the end, when Maya's cover is finally broken and he snaps at her, the rage that just comes through it, like when he's banging on the glass. I listen to these at work, so it's like he's banging on the glass. I'm reacting. Open my coworkers didn't just see me twitch.
I think it ended up on the cutting room floor, but there was a moment where she. Where Pharaoh narrates, I had come down here to get peace of mind from Ben that was selfish of me, but you know, I should just let him keep believing in Pharaoh. So she goes down there to sort of face the music, realizes, oh no, he didn't know, but still wants to get it off her chest to make herself feel better, but then decides not to. And then right after she decides that is when Sully blows it open for her. So and that to me was super powerful, thinking about it from her perspective, realizing oh, how selfish is that? That you didn't even stop to think. You just want to get this off your chest. You didn't even stop to think what that would do to him.
Poor Ben.
Womp womp.
Poor Ben.
So as they're climbing the tower, BB's also saying, you know, there's really not going to be, like, if you get this transmission out, Oni's just going to block it. And Bossman comes in and tries to convincingly say, if people are hearing it, all Maya has to do is make them feel like they're there, that the experience is real and it is happening. And luckily, the old gear in the tower still works. So she starts broadcasting, starts explaining everything that's going on around everything with the gravitational fluctuations, cities falling over, fighting breaking out, noting that the NCA and the UNSC are just fighting each other, completely ignoring all the destruction that's going on around. And she has a little monologue that she believes she's finally doing something that's purely good, of actually broadcasting what's going on. So we get to the point where they finally see the Guardian come out of the ground, and she starts explaining it as seeing the city falling, but no, it starts rising. And from just the sheer, I guess, the movement of the Guardian up where the city is built on, all the buildings are just collapsing under that. And then the first pulse of the Guardian, so if you've played the campaign up to the point where you get to your first Guardian, there's a big pulse that goes out. So the first pulse kind of shatters a bunch of windows, and then Boswick decides to shoot the radio.
Right. Before you touch on that, I mean, I think what you said, you recounted the thing that it meant to Maya, that it was finally, she could do something that was purely good. Mm-hmm. That was something we talked about for a long time throughout this season, where if you go back and think about it, everything she's tried to do, stuck between Oni and the rebels, she just can't. She's trying to actually do the right thing as Pharaoh, as Maya, and she just keeps getting resistance everywhere. And she there's no clean win. Everything feels dirty. And so we liked the idea of her getting this point where she finally felt like, I could do something that's purely good without sacrificing, without, you know, it's sort of the merging of Maya and Pharaoh for her. At least that's what she wanted. Yeah.
Nice tie-in. So after Boswick shoots out the radio, she basically goes on to say that everyone has all the information they need from this transmission. And now the thing that needs to be solidified, or that would kind of just sell it, is to have Pharaoh die, basically risking her life to send out that information. And at first, Maya was like, are you crazy? what are you talking about? And after a little bit of explaining, Boswick basically convinces Maya that it's the idea of Pharaoh that is giving people hope. It's not necessarily a war of violence, but it's a war of ideas. And that Pharaoh is the idea that's going to help the rebels win. More importantly, it's her idea, being Boswick's idea. And
how'd you guys feel about that? How'd you guys feel about that rationale?
I thought it played in very well. I mean, the whole sense of being a martyr for a cause. I mean, it basically what they explained afterwards, with Maya explaining to BB that, yeah, it was the whole martyrdom thing, and then basically proving, or when BB said that there was a lot more traction with the Pharaoh story than there was the Maya story being Oni. I mean, martyrdom does and has traditionally kind of proven to be a very useful tool, and is very iconic of a cause. So it made a lot of sense to me to kind of do that, and for Boswick to pull something like that out.
Yeah, you kind of nailed it. No, I think it's kind of nailed it. I think that moment where Boswick is explaining what she's going to do to Maya, I don't think Maya supports it. She still wants to live, but at some point there's a turn in her head where she just accepts it. And you can kind of hear when she says, go ahead. She knows she's not walking out of there.
Yeah, I would say that. I think, you know, you kind of Maya supports it.
That she finally sort of gives herself to this.
But I think I see it the same way. I think the sort of distinction that she's trying to you know, sort of find who she is between Pharaoh and Maya. I think I like what she says at the end when she says, Pharaoh needed to be martyred for the cause. And then she also makes the point that Maya needed to pay for her betrayal. Because I think that's something that she was looking for when she went to Ben that first time. And because she felt guilty. She felt guilty for the weight of all the lies and everything. And I think in a way that sort of whatever relief she didn't get from seeing Ben, she liked the idea of, in some way she accepted the idea of, I need to pay for what I did as mom.
Yeah.
Can you guys hear us better now?
We can hear
you guys hear us better now?
Yeah, but Ian has a lot of, it's like, sounds windy almost.
I just haven't been talking.
Oh, okay.
But it sounds like you're going down a snowy slope.
Yeah, sounds like you're
going down a foggy road.
But yeah, and kind of to your point, Andrew, she basically says that same thing at the end. She wanted to pay for her betrayal.
Right. And I think, I'm not entirely sure, but I think if you listen to episode one from that perspective, that she wants to unload this guilt, but she's not allowed to. I think it makes sense. I think.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, I agree. That was sort of the whole point.
Yeah,
right.
Well, it gives
that's
a new
the way
perspective.
It was in our head. I hope it came across in the actual final product.
Well, and one of the things that we've been talking about on the podcast since season two came out is now we have to go back and listen to. I mean, even for just the pilot for season two, we like go back and listen to season one now, knowing who Pharaoh actually is and all the things that they tried to make Ben do. And now for the end of season two, now we go back and start listening to season two, knowing what happened after
also,
at the end.
Now you also have to ask yourself the question, how does Mashaq know about Pharaoh?
How did he know about her?
Yeah, I already asked that question.
Andrew. Yeah, that is one of like 50 things that nobody has asked. I love that.
But it's one of the, if you can start to pick that apart, a lot of other things that are weird will come into focus, I think.
Huh.
And also, I think focusing on the idea of what Sully was doing and to the extent in which he may have been trying to warn Ben or not, I think it's worth going back and listening to season one from that perspective as well.
Yeah, it's like
Ben, it's really funny. The reaction to Sully for me, and I read a lot of Sully hate after episode one. And it's funny, I didn't expect that. I thought that people would kind of see that. I mean, yeah, he isn't the nicest guy, and he's a little rough around the edges, but he did help Ben in some way in that sense where he came in and he fixed things for him, and he's making some valid points. He doesn't come off like a total monster, but
right.
I think to some degree,
it's a hard job.
Yeah.
Well, I think people have a point to some extent, but I also think a lot of it is the sort of armchair quarterback. Where it's like, well, I mean, but you don't work for Oni in their building every day with them watching everything you do. You have no idea what his stresses are, you know?
Yep.
I'm not saying I agree with him, but it's
Andrew
easy
told
to
me
judge.
He said, I agree with everything Sully did say. He said, when I grow up, I want to be Sully.
Well, and I think for the first episode of season two, it just kind of helps solidify, okay, Sully was, in fact, looking out for Ben because he didn't want to see Ben go down this rabbit hole. Not for the fact of trying to cover up any story, but it seemed like after that first episode, he genuinely didn't want Ben to fall into that susceptibility. And unfortunately,
well, yeah, he knew what would happen to him.
Right. So I thought that was just a really cool kind of revelation to that, where it's like, okay, Sully really isn't the bad person that he was really portrayed as in season one. That first episode in season two was like, okay, Sully isn't nearly as bad as he was portrayed, unfortunately.
He's still a jerk, though.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, he works for Oni.
In Halo, though, like, you see it a lot in Halo 4, you see it in 3, where people say, you can't do this. This is the way things are. There's an order to things. And, yeah, it feels like shit. Yeah, I mean, it might be hopeless. But this is the way things are. And, you know, Maya ultimately makes a choice to defy that. And the Master Chief makes choices all the time to defy that. Against the Forerunner, against your friend and mine, Del Rio.
Your friend and mine, Del Rio.
And then
and then you know Sully is kind of the other side of the coin where he says here's the line and he toes the line.
Kind of maybe the other side of the coin where he says here's the line and he toes the line.
Yeah, and that's where it really comes into the play of like the I guess the real kind of two sides of the coin for that first season. But
can I just add to the Andrew Del Rio when Mark Ralston came in to record. So that was something we really wanted to do, was make him a senator in season one. And it was one of those last minute things where we were able to get a hold of him and he really wanted to do it. And he came in and it was just so crazy.
We were
just
going to quote him first, right? We were just going to quote him.
Yeah. At first he was just going to be quoted by the reporter, but eventually we got a hold of him and he decided to come in. So I got to meet him and I was like, do you know how much people hate you? He was like, yes, I do.
I am so glad you guys got him back. One of my biggest complaints with Halo 4 is Andrew Del Rio, because he is this throwaway character. He's there just to create a temporary wall for the chief, and he does. I hated how he was mistreated. And I hated how the fan base mistreated him. He's kind of he's a dick. He's abrasive, but you know what? I think he was in the right. Sure, his decision may not be, looking back, wasn't the best, but. He's not going to have that 2020 hindsight. He's thinking about getting. He's looking to get everybody. He's looking to get his crew home to save as many lives as possible.
The funny thing is, we actually talked to 343 about that. Because we kind of needed this government person to fill this role.
And said, "What
if it's Del Rio? What if
he takes the bag?
Now his career's washed up, and now he's got to figure out if he can make a role for himself in politics. Which is that happens all the time."
Yep.
We talked to Frank about that, and we made the point you did. He's not friendly. He's not wrong. Frank's like, okay.
What I loved, that was one of my favorite parts from a writing perspective, when the whole Biko thing with the chief and having, first of all, that Ian, remember we went back and forth on that forever because we knew that nobody would buy that the chief did anything wrong. So we really had to make it not that
going
to
be really high.
We had to make it a real thing that he did, but for good reasons.
Yep.
But writing Del Rio's speech, I just it was so much fun because I knew how much everybody hated Del Rio, and the idea of just him having all that airtime to just twist the knife, I kept picturing all these fans having to listen. Just getting angrier and angrier and angrier, knowing that nobody is standing up for him. You know,
I got to experience that in my own videos on the matter, like so many times. Going in and like defending Del Rio. It's like, guys, he's not exactly wrong. He's a dick about it, but that doesn't make him wrong,
right? And we actually thought about possibilities that could be revealed that actually redeemed Del Rio a little bit. I mean, he's still a douche, but just the idea that he. Perhaps he was put in that position. Perhaps he was, for some reason he was allowed to be the fall guy there in terms of PR. Because at the end of 13,
he's put on vacation. He's a family issues.
So it's quite possible that he was set up to espouse that, by some political force. And
I would feel so sorry for him if he got screwed over twice like that.
Right. Well, but he did have a choice to say that.
He likes it.
Yeah.
But if I were him, I'd be like, you got to be kidding me. I got to stop walking. Trap.
Well, now it's time to go to the private industry.
Yeah, exactly.
You never know how far the reach Baron Gossi is.
Yeah. She always knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So to wrap up this episode, we have Mike basically convinced of pulling the whole martyrdom card, and Bosvick is shaking as she's like trying to convince herself to pull the trigger, misfires once, and then eventually shoots Maya in the chest. She falls out of a window from the tower, hits the ground, and dies.
Did you guys buy it? Were you like, what? No, she's not dead. Or did you believe it?
It's like,
I
almost wanted to believe it at first, but it's like, she's been narrating this whole time. She can't be dead.
Wait a minute. Right. How could she be narrating this if she's dead?
Retcon.
Yeah.
Well, Halo's had plenty of those, so nothing new.
I mean, we have one of the most fun moments was definitely when we have the sort of computery kind of background turn off. It's that reveal right there. Where it's like, oh god, and then you can just feel it coming. It was a lot of fun to do.
Also, I want to give you big points for that sound. Hits the ground, really stomach-churning.
Oh, well, credit to Patrick Bird and the team at Sonicwool, who are sound design partners, who they just did an incredible job on all that. Like, I would give them notes, and they would make my scribbly notes into amazing sounds, so.
That's awesome, because all the sound effects in here truly made it feel like you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time. Like, even the kid yar eating their messed up meals, been banging on the glass. The grenades in the bed, all that stuff was like super convincing. It, like, even for just an audio experience, it made you feel like you were there.
Well, it's funny. Like, the way the process works is, you know, we do like these, you call them radio edits, and basically it's just dialogue and tracks of dialogue and efforts are basically like when the characters would make like breathy sounds when they're running or grunts and things like that, and we'd do some music sound design, and then I would go through and anytime anything that we'd want to have a sound for, like the rustling of a jacket or a footstep or, you know, the kind of footstep, whether stepping on grass or whatever it is, just have a big log sheet of notes, and then they would go through and create all those or find them from libraries. They did an incredible job of bringing it all to life, so huge props to them.
They're very definitely patient. Huge props to you guys too. I'm sure you kind of have to be with making something this crazy. But yeah.
Oh, and also big thanks to 343. They provided us with a ton of in-lore sounds, which was really, really cool of them.
Yeah,
they
were making a few of those.
Those guys are like slaving away. They're making the game. And it's like, excuse me, could we have some Wardog sounds, please? They're like, yes.
But also, even like with the Kick Yar stuff, for instance, like you know, we work with their sound design team, and they would give us sort of the Pro Tools like settings to help us sort of guide it to a place so we could design the Kick Yar a certain way, and to make sure that the world we're creating really aligned with the world they've created, and that you couldn't really differentiate between the stuff we were sound designing and the stuff they were sound designing for the game. So, you know, we wanted to make it sound as much like a true 343 product as possible.
Well, I think you guys sold it.
Yeah. Yes.
So let's wrap up this episode. We have BB come on.
Just let it keep going. Just let it keep going forever.
Yeah.
But
never stop.
I know it's. I'm sad this is over. I really am, because this has been.
Is
so,
it though?
So
is
cool.
It really?
A hunt for truth is never over.
Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah, you guys can still hunt the truth as long as you want.
Yep.
Yeah.
Keep hunting.
Spin off.
Then we can have our own. They have to figure out which truth is the actual truth.
Ooh. Yeah.
Hunt the truth, truth, and hunt hunting truth.
Do you guys have any burning questions that, like, we're all here.
I don't know about questions, but yeah, I'm curious, like, is she actually an AI at the end, or is it just, because I didn't get the, because BB says that she's slated to be an AI.
It's a little tricky. The challenge there, obviously, is that, you know, AIs don't recognize that they were the person they were, right?
Yeah.
So we had to come up with a device it's sort of pre her becoming an AI, but BB's routing through all of her memories, so yeah, she still recognizes herself as herself.
That's always what I figured, and like everyone's hearing saying that it's like, oh, she's actually a full on AI now. And I don't think so.
But
so
yeah,
it's good to have that confirmation.
We didn't want to get too much into the process, because I think that's for 343 to decide exactly.
Yeah. And we want to get to it
out of the way and without defining exactly what happened.
It's just enough so we can accomplish it in the film.
Good luck adding this, guys.
Yeah.
They're really supportive with us and giving us just enough so we could accomplish it in the show.
Thanks, I got the whole time.
Getting some.
Was I cutting out the whole time?
Half the time. No, yeah.
There's a bizarre series of echoes and then snow mass effects. But I think
it was pretty cool because Frank actually, you know, by the way, I don't, if you ever get the chance to talk to Frank, please take it. The man is brilliant. He understands technology.
He understands technology. Science.
Crazy smart dude.
Yeah.
I've noticed that in his books.
He was like, I want to show you something.
And it's called Saint's Testimony.
Saint's Testimony. That was crazy, crazy cool.
Oh, that was amazing.
Saint's Testimony. Yeah. Spectacular.
Well, and that brings a lot. Saint's Testimony alone just brings a lot of interesting questions to the table.
Yeah. Like,
what about Black Tea?
You don't want to touch because it was their territory to a large extent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it brings up, well, if you've played Halo 5, the campaign, Saint's Testimony brings up some pretty interesting questions about what's happening in the game, and then also for the finale of this, too. So it's definitely one of those things where there's a lot of implications going within the external fiction to the game and the game itself. But yeah, I just wanted to kind of finish up the episode so we could ask some of the burning questions.
Why were there grenades under Mashok's bed?
Hang on, let me finish. We'll get to that in a second. So BB's asking that, if there was anything else that she left out of recalling her memories, and he kind of points out, well, how did Maya specifically feel about it? How did you feel about the decision? And Maya comes back and says it was a distasteful decision that she believes that Boswick made for the greater good. And at the end of the day, Maya was looking to kind of pay for her betrayal. So this kind of wraps around to the whole theme at the beginning in episode one, where she went to go see Mashok and basically just kind of pay for what she's done to people, what, like ruining people's lives or kind of betraying Oni and all that stuff. And then BB says this has been most enlightening and starts to go. And she starts to say, well, I have questions of what's going on. And the first question that she asks is, did Pharaoh become the martyr that she wanted to be? Did she actually save lives? And she mentions that they're restricting my access. And he's like, yeah, there's a reason for that. There's a reason why you don't have all this information. And then one last question that she's able to ask is what is this place that they're at? And BB says it's basically, think of it as a waiting room of sorts. No one stays here for long because we're expensive equipment. And then the report to Osman. Just want to wrap up with that. Basically kind of recounting the incidents on Leica 3. Agent Sankar was, or her vital signs failed at 1534. Cause of death with a single shot to the chest by a rebel leader known as Boswick, who used it as a move for strategic propaganda. They captured the most recent demonstration with her. Basically, she was saying how great Furrow was and that we should, that they should kind of live on to complete her legacy, that and don't let her sacrifice be for nothing. Eventually, they were able to contain Agent Sankar's broadcast, but the news of Pharaoh's martyrdom has spread to the outer colonies, and they leaked the idea of Maya being an Oni agent to some friendly journalists, but as Boswick accurately predicted, the story of Pharaoh is actually taking more hold than Maya's true identity. Maya's brain was eventually recovered intact, and as predicted, Maya's brain, her neural structure, is an excellent candidate for AI assimilation. And with all the data that BB has been able to capture from Maya's brain, has been advantageous given the events that occurred on October 28th. And BB says it's been a rare and unique opportunity to capture all the actions of a rogue agent, but also her thoughts and feelings during the whole ordeal as well. He's still digging through some more memories, but he believes that his report can be considered completed. Which also explains why, for the Hunt the Truth website, it's a Oni report, an ongoing investigation.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, we're the first one, we're the public accessing this site, now we're Oni agents accessing this data bank or report, this ongoing report.
I'm really happy you guys noticed that.
Oh, yeah.
And I hope you guys noticed that every image we created was captured from her brain as well.
I figured it was.
I had not imagined that, but that explains a lot about some of those images.
That's why they're all first person.
Well, there's an interesting thing about, I was just listening to a podcast that Ian told me about, actually, where they were talking about how we think about memory, human memory, as though it was a recording, but it's not. It's not at all. In fact, they've done studies where they can disprove to you that something, like they can show you video proving that something you remember didn't actually happen. So you will stop believing it, but you will still have the memory. You will still remember it. Yeah. You'll just know it's not real. So it's interesting that the thinking about that subjectivity looking back at season one or season two.
Yeah. What is the truth? It's like you can keep hunting the truth, like you said. So much truth to hunt.
Subjective.
Hyper subjective.
So the whole AI thing was pretty interesting. That was a complete, I think, out of left field that no one was expecting at all. But it explains a lot of what happened in season two. One being of how did they even get the audio snippets in the first place? She would have had to be recording the entire time since the end of season one, basically. So that makes a lot of sense that having her brain kind of captured and just kind of going through her memories, and then the whole narration makes even more sense after that, too. There's nothing really else. I mean, I think a big question is kind of what's with Hunt the Truth from here on out? I mean, the game's out. All the promotion for now is done as far as the game concerned. But what's next for Hunt the Truth in terms of an audio podcast? I mean, do you guys have plans?
You know, we have no plans right now. I think, you know, we would obviously love to work with 343 more. And, you know, I think whatever capacity they would love to work with us. So, you know, we'll talk to them, I'm sure, in the coming weeks and months. And then, you know, we work with the marketing teams a lot and we do a lot of that kind of stuff, but you know, there'll be conversations and hopefully we can help 343 and support them, you know, in their future games and, you know, in whatever way they like. Very political answer.
Any way they don't mind.
I'm sure there's plenty of possibilities.
We've had so much fun making these things, and I think, you know, it's just been a blast for us, and we really enjoyed it. So we love doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotten such great reception among the fan base. I would shudder to think 343 not wanting to work with you guys again. And I really hope they do, be it for another Hunt the Truth or just any sort of continuing audio podcast for whatever my upcoming game.
They have an amazing universe, and it's been like pretty amazing. It's just been an amazing honor to be able to play with that universe. Not only that, but get access and support from all these amazing people who make it happen and have made it happen for all the years. So it's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
We could also just take a left turn and just do like Michael Sullivan reading the love letters to Sarah Palmer.
Yeah.
<That's right.
laughs> That would be,
I guess what Ian's saying is it's scalable. It's scalable.
We would just spread our wings, stretch our legs.
Yeah. But no, I do want to echo what Andrew said. I mean, I can remember the exact spot and place I was. It was at Babbage Computers, which for some of you guys play
video games. The first time I saw Halo and I played Halo was at a kiosk at Babbage's. And to walk into 343 to talk to those people. And I remember it started with like, could we name a ship? Could we touch this character? And it's been just an incredible privilege. As a fan, it was unreal. So if anyone from 343 is listening, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for letting them do this. This has been an amazing, amazing addition to the Halo fiction. It's something that's been, I mean, I don't think there's really been many other game franchises that have done something quite like this. So it's really cool to see something like this happen. And I mean, I'm a little biased when it comes to that because I run the podcast, so I have a particular affinity towards that. But I mean, the work that you guys done has just been completely amazing, and I can't thank you guys enough for putting the hours in to make this possible.
Well, thank you. That's so nice.
Thank you for listening.
I think not only has it been an honor to work with everyone who's made Halo, the fan base is absolutely incredible. And just your guys' podcast, or like just all the content that you guys make individually and together, is incredible. And seeing just the way the community responded and gave it a chance and was active, it was truly remarkable to be able to be on this side of it and see it good and bad. Like, it was just that amount of passion is something that you don't get to work with very often, in anything creative. And it's truly been amazing. So thank you guys. And thank everybody who's been, involved in the fan base, who's, like reposted and shown support or just talk smack, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's been pretty incredible.
To echo Andrew's sentiment really quickly, you have no idea how much the content you guys were making, the YouTube videos, the tweets, that stuff kept us going like in really heavy, hectic times.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we check it all. We were actively, you know, looking at everything along the way, and it's been incredible. And just one last thing I want to say is that, you know, the team at this was part of the marketing program for Halo 5, and the team at Xbox, they really put themselves in the line and were fully supportive of this program and the whole show. And that was also an incredible thing to have something like this audio series that's part of this huge machine. And you have the marketing teams at Xbox, and you have the team at 343 and us and our agency and working seamlessly with the other agencies as well on this campaign to make something that was just so organic and true to
the huge leap of faith.
Yeah. To the kind of stories that we want to tell and something this creative and fun.
Yeah.
That was pretty incredible. And in my experience, that doesn't happen very often. So yeah, kudos to everybody involved, honestly.
Can we just have a round of applause right now for everybody?
Everyone.
Yeah.
In the
world. Yay. Yeah, yay. Definitely. Yay. And I mean, huge shout outs to 343, you guys, and everyone that helped make these. This has been such a amazing experience, and it's kind of sad to see it kind of come to a close for now. Hopefully there'll be something in the future to kind of bring it back. Just
hopefully for now is the key phrase there.
Yes,
definitely.
Yes, I would have to agree with that.
Dun, dun.
Actually, that reminds me. I don't know if that was on purpose, but I liked how it was like that kind of just like that six note song or whatever. It's kind of matched.
Oh yeah, and well, with Jonathan Paulson. Jonathan Paulson, yep, was our composer.
Yeah, he like it lined up well with the original idea of the Spartan Twos. They had the six note Ali Ali Oxen Free as their call sign. Maybe I'm reading, yep, too much into that, but that's like that just like popped in my head during season two a lot more prominently. It's with a slower
version, yeah,
in and out. But
Jonathan Paulson definitely nailed the definition of an economic hook.
Oh, that, yeah.
Just like get in, get out, earworm, done.
Yeah.
Are those songs or musical pieces, are those the bonus tracks that are in the limited edition of the soundtrack, or are those going to be available somewhere?
I don't know, actually. I mean, all the stuff was created original. It was all original material created by Jonathan Paulson, I don't know if it is available anywhere. I'm not sure actually about that. Yeah,
that's an interesting conversation.
And the better question is, what is the name of the musician who made it in universe and that Ben took it from him? Did he pay for that music in universe?
Or what about why is BB adding it in there for his reports to Saren Osman?
Well, I mean, it's BB. A little dig. That, you know, I've thought about this, and it's his little dig. It's his little, like, you know, I'm gonna, yeah, this is fun for me. I'm just, yeah, gonna make it like a show for you, Saren. Enjoy.
Yeah. So if you're Saren Osman, if you're Saren Osman, I imagine you're listening to it and going, "Oh my god, thanks, BB. Great."
Yeah, that was great. Thanks. I pull on the phone. It's like, hey, Perigoski, have you heard this?
Yeah, this is my new jam.
Oh, and just one more quip that I've always wanted to tell someone just because I think it's awesome. So just so you guys know, Mashok, the name Mashok, he's actually the guy if you tweet any of this, the Xbox social channels, the guy on the other side is named Mashok.
He works with us.
Yeah.
He has a different last name. But that's where we got it.
So are there grenades under his bed?
Probably, actually, yeah.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Well, there are so many other burning questions we have, and I hope we can get you guys on for at least a follow-up podcast with some of the voice actors to kind of go through some of the nitty-gritty stuff, too, because, I mean, this has been, I mean, the finale was just kind of mind-blowing, and given some of the stuff that happens in the campaign, it's even one more of those questions just kind of rise up, but I will ask this final question.
Oh, now I need to, I have burning questions.
Well, I do have one question to follow up on. You mentioned in your interview with GameSpot, there's an interview that before, like when the preview came out, you said that there would be a character from Hunt the Truth in the game. Do you have any hint of where that might be or who it is?
So I don't think I said that. I think Frank said that, and I still don't know. I have no idea.
You know what?
It could be someone like Saren Osmond. I when he said that, I was like, I wonder who he's talking about, because I had no idea. So I'm curious myself.
I think I know where it is, but I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, Ian.
Here's what I will say is that
the commercial that came out.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know that for a fact, though. So we had never seen that, and then it came out, and we're all looking at each other like, is that our dude?
The really sinister thing is, in addition to being a genius, Frank is really smart, so he just kind of makes us.
Yeah, I love Petrosky. I love that character.
Yeah. Troy Baker is just a stud.
His performance in the last episode might have been my favorite performance of the whole series.
Ian loves saying his name.
Ian says his name the best.
Anthony Petrosky.
Say it for me once.
Petrosky.
Yeah.
Get funny. In all Baltic.
You know what is funny, though? Like, I will say, going through all this, I just want to make the names weirder and weirder to make everyone have to, like...
I will have so much fun pronouncing and getting corrected.
It's even harder to spell them.
Like school teachers.
How many ways can you spell Mashok on a forum?
Oh, God. All of them. Yeah.
Mishnak. Correct each other. That's the best part. They correct each other wrong.
It's fine at one point, but then once the cast list comes out, it's like, guys, there's the source right here.
No, why would you look it up? That's too difficult. It's way easier to just say it.
Well, I know, like, for the first couple episodes,
this is the internet.
I would tweet Noam, like, okay, I need name spellings for these guys.
It should all be on IMDb now, so I think we're good.
Okay. And then I just put one point, I just gave up, because I'm like, yeah, I'll just figure it out later.
Yeah.
But no, this has been awesome. Awesome production from all of you guys. Awesome work for the podcast, for the content. It's amazing. And I certainly hope we do see something else in the future.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate you guys and taking the time to talk to us too. It's been awesome. We've had a lot of fun.
Really a pleasure.
I'm hoping that moving on now, if we're not doing Hunt the Truth right now, if you guys could just review other things in my life so I can listen to podcasts and think about it.
he's got some tweets coming out soon.
Yeah, if you guys can just check that out, let me know what's happening.
All right. We'll try to do that for you.
Welcome back.
That was a really nice
actually
note.
Tweeted out.
Well, and this was,
so
I mean,
what does this mean in the context of his life? Well, let's break it down from what little we know. According to his tweet from 2 days ago.
Just reviewing
it. He may have eaten a ham sandwich.
So what does that really mean in context of this latest one about getting a new car? Well, I think a ham sandwich is secret. Conspiracy.
I need that. I need that in life.
Need those outrageous theories to keep you going.
Yep, exactly.
I know exactly how that feels.
The theorist, man. There's a bunch of crazy ones out there, all in the slush.
God, I want to see the slush somebody talk about the slush in another piece of Halo media. Now, I just love the idea of that.
All in the slush.
Yes,
it's a nice catch-all, isn't it?
Yeah.
Put it in the slush.
Yeah, and now you have that explanation. It's like, you know, something just comes out of nowhere in the Halo universe. Where'd that come from? Oh, the slush.
The Outer Colony slush.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a good fallback.
What the hell are you talking about? Don't you know the slush, man? It's the slush.
Good stuff. But yeah, we will hopefully we can follow up with you guys in a couple weeks. And there's obviously a bunch of burning questions I'm sure a lot of people have. So I want to give some people time to ask some questions. Then hopefully we can get some to you. And hopefully we can see all three of you back here in a few weeks to answer some of those. And hopefully we can get some of the other voice actors on and get their views on the whole season and the whole experience. Because this has been, I mean, judging by the reaction of seeing Gianna just last night from just kind of being around a bunch of people in cosplays, it's obvious that these people are definitely into just the whole universe. It'd be cool to get that perspective too.
Definitely.
Thank you guys for coming on. This has been an awesome episode to have you guys a part of. It's been awesome to get to experience your work and just really dive into it, get into a bunch of nitty-gritty details and have a bunch of fun with it. It's been an awesome experience, and thank you guys so much for keeping us entertained for I guess a total of
9 months.
Yeah. Wow.
It's literally a baby.
Yeah, I was just gonna make that.
22 episodes, 6 hours, 34 images.
This is how babies are made. Yeah. If you make enough episodes and pictures, you get a baby.
I still think the one most disturbing thing isn't the Kid Yar soup, isn't Ben being locked away, isn't Maya becoming an AI, but is that Sully's a hungry boy.
And on that note.
I just like, if I say it, can I get in the Podtacular theme song? That's really all
I don't know if you guys, did you guys watch Halo 5 Live? Did you see our second?
No, God.
No, I have not yet.
Okay, so
we're stretching our legs, guys.
We had like 8 minutes. We were on for like 10 minutes, and Ian goes, "Well, you know, with season two, we really wanted to spread our legs."
You know, what's funny is that I was alluding to that a couple times in this podcast, but I you came right out and said it. You called it out.
Yeah. I chose not to.
Well, so Brian Reed looked at, you know, the corner of his eye like, what did you
just say? Brian Reed looked out at me like I had let out a Kid Yar scream. Like, but you know, spread them.
You gotta stretch those wings.
Yeah.
You gotta flex them.
All right. Well, I think we've done it, guys.
I think we've sufficiently ruined Podtacular.
Accomplished.
Oh, I love you guys. This has been awesome. For everyone listening in the Twitch to us live, thank you for dropping on by. For those that have downloaded this, thank you for tuning in to all these wonderful episodes. We will be returning to our one-a-week podcast with No More Hunt the Truth to cover for now, depending on what happens in the future. We'll be doing our podcast on Thursdays only. But it's been a wonderful journey, so please go check out all the episodes if you haven't already. It's been such an amazing journey. I just can't get enough of just how much effort and how great this has been just to listen to. It's been totally awesome. So Noah, Ian, and Andrew, thank you guys for all the hard work that you did. Thank you to everyone at 343 that helped out with providing assets and putting input into it, and to all the other partners that helped make this a possibility. Thank you guys so much for everything that you've done, all the support. It's been an absolute blast and definitely one of the best campaigns, I think, for a video game launch that I have ever experienced. So thank you guys so much for making that happen.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah. Toa, GT, any last words? It
can't happen if you guys don't listen. So
that, yeah, true.
Yeah, I just want to echo what you said, Dust. It's been a wonderful journey, and it, you know, it's finally great to find somebody that has a more demented mind state than my own. But no, it was a lot of fun. It was a real nostalgic for me because growing up, I grew up listening to a lot of the old radio broadcasts that a couple of my teachers would loaned to me, and then my dad actually had records, you know, vinyl of. So, you know, I kind of grew up in listening to those type of radio dramas, and it was a lot of it brought back a lot of good memories to that. And you, the quality of this, it just, it really has impressed me. And I hope to hear some more from you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I couldn't top what Dustin and Todd have said. So it's like, again, just thank you for making this the highlight of every day that it came out. Was like, when's it going to come out? When's it going to come out? This made the made my day every day.
Awesome.
And then mine's blown.
Like, literally, they had to clean up a mess at work the other day because of that. So, you guys will receive the bill.
Oh, great.
Just a mess? There's been plenty of messes to clean up over here.
Yeah.
Spreading legs, mind's blown.
Oh, boy. This is turning into Podtacular After Dark.
Yeah, a very special episode of Podtacular.
Yeah, you'll have to hang around for some of our after shows.
Podtacular. Tonight we have a very special guest.
We just have you guys do like a radio drama for us. Just like a minute or two quibs, like every show. This week on the Podtacular drama, on the drama cast, Dustin loses his brains. Toa spreads his legs too much.
Well, there's a funny story about that that relates to my but we won't talk about that.
Oh, here, man.
Right? Save that one for save that one for next time.
Yeah, we'll do that one later.
I can't have the other Ian being the only one being weird here, so.
All right, so everyone, thank you for tuning in. Please make sure you check us out on our website, social media. Check out our Spartan Company if you're playing Halo 5. We have some events going up here pretty soon. Make sure you get some fun action on that. We will be back on Thursday talking about Halo 5 and all of its launchy goodness now that everyone is playing it. I can hear the turn signal in the background.
Ding, 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 ding.
Please check out the podcast network. There's a few other podcasts that we are partnered up with that kind of do some gaming specific stuff. So please check them out. Please check us out on YouTube for all of our Halo 5 content. And again, if you haven't checked out Hunt the Truth, you guys should definitely catch up on that if you haven't already, or else this podcast wouldn't really make any sense to you. And again, Noah, Ian, and Andrew, thank you so much for taking time out of your days to come on over and chill with us for a couple of hours. And hopefully we'll see you guys in a few weeks to answer some of our most burning questions about the series.
Yep. Cool. Sounds good. Thanks again.
All right.
Talk to you guys soon.
Until next time, guys, keep on shining.